All right. Thumbs are up, which means it's your time to tell me to kill myself.
No! No, they're going to demonetize it. We got to get those numbers up, man.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Mamdani, DSA, Barack Hussein Obama. Let's hit some highlights.
Okay,
let's
you're right.
Bring the people in. Mamdani,
yep.
Wrecking New York. You're going to want to. No, we KMS. Just use that. That's
KMS.
That's a euphemism mm-hmm. for what you were just talking about.
Okay.
Well, that's what you're going to want to do.
What does that stand for?
It's what you're going to want to do if you're visiting New York.
Oh, no.
Because rental prices there,
mm-hmm.
all-time high of $8 trillion per unit per
yeah.
day. It's
mm-hmm.
about that. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are Mamdani's chickens coming home to roost?
Mm, good question, Jeremiah Wright.
Yeah.
So, that's a blast from the past,
oh,
right?
Oh, dirty air, dirty water. Just remember Sean Hannity would always mutter that phrase when he was talking about Obama's past comments, dirty air, dirty water. I actually don't even remember what it is in reference to, but now whenever I think of Sean Hannity, I go, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, dirty air, dirty water. And those things are now divorced from my, I don't know, it's just like a little prayer I make before I go to bed. I don't know what he was talking about or what even the controversy was anymore.
Yeah.
That was Obama's preacher.
Right, yeah, of course, I remember.
Right.
Yeah,
Muslim?
No, he's a pastor of some kind.
Of Islam.
Yeah.
I think it was Islam.
I don't know really what's going on that side of the aisle, but yeah. He was obviously controversial during the campaign because of some of his comments about how 9/11 was our fault or whatever.
Right.
And then later...
Comments shared by all the people running for right. office as Democrats right now.
Right.
Yeah. Just a little too early on that one.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Hey, that's... it's like being an investor. If you're a little too early... You call the bubble a little too early, you're still a bad investor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, then he became controversial because, or additionally controversial, because after Obama got elected, he had some comments about how, like, all the Jews around him wouldn't let Jeremiah Wright talk to Obama. So
he'll be an excellent guest on Tucker Carlson's podcast,
right, yeah.
or Candace Owens.
Or a, you know, chief of staff in the next Democratic administration.
Noted scholar. They're calling him one of the smartest religious figures alive.
But I guess you've never heard of
you've
him.
You've never... The mainstream media doesn't want to talk about him.
I would be interested if I was a journalist.
We okay. kid. We're
just joshing around. That's what this
positive.
Podcast is all about.
Joshing. People named Josh.
Yep.
We have too many of them.
You think so?
Too
I
many
say
J
not
names.
Enough. Yeah.
Just in reason's workplace.
That's true. Joe's and...
Justin's and...
Jacob's
yeah.
and... Do we have a James? There's a Jeff.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm.
But regardless, yeah. So the rents in New York City, are they Mamdani's fault? He's been mayor for about 6 months, so
yeah.
I would say not really.
The rent freeze.
So the rent freeze, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic with rent control. So New York's housing stock is substantially rent controlled, or I guess you'd say rent stabilized is the technical name of the program. About, 40% of rental units, close to a third of all housing. And classical economics would predict that rent control will reduce the prices of rent-controlled housing, and it will increase overall market rents because it's increasing the demand for people to live in New York City and taking some units out of the supply of market-rate housing. And so to that degree, you could say the rent freeze, which, you know, again, was just enacted, but is having some marginal increase.
I stopped listening. I was texting someone about plans later. We're going to get cigars. But yeah, exactly what you were saying.
Okay, hey, come on. This is important
okay,
stuff.
Focus.
This is the one thing I have a little bit of knowledge and expertise on.
This is the one thing
you
get out of bed for.
I will say, and even then, sometimes it's hard. But
yeah.
Now, I will say, it has been kind of irritating me.
Keep a bottle
people
by
are,
the bedside.
Yeah.
box of these.
That's right.
These boys.
Yeah.
Which we're not doing any free advertising for, so who knows what's in that.
We're doing paid advertising? Finally, yeah. We've been doing this podcast for, 7 months now? It's
when
about time
are they going to buy us off? When is someone going to buy us off?
Any interest group out there?
Yeah.
We
can be bought.
Easily.
We are corrupt as hell.
Yeah. $10 a week, you know? That's...
Well, no, we got to price ourselves a little higher than that.
No, I'm down to the dirt, yeah.
you'll knife fight a homeless man for a
one
buck.
More zin.
Okay.
It has been irritating me a little, the commentary around Mamdani, because he has adopted the rhetoric of a, YIMBY abundance pill. Right. We gotta build more, and we even have to have, you know, private housing build more.
Right.
But he's also dedicated to the system of rent stabilization that
and foreign terrorism.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, sure. Both of which are bad for the housing supply. Yeah. So rent stabilization A is keeping a lot of units off the market because it's unprofitable to rent them, right? And you can't, because they're vacant and dilapidated, and you can't raise the rent to cover the cost of repairs. So that's what, 60,000 units in New York are off the market because of this system. And then secondly, because rent control, again, raises the price of market rents, right? So this treatment of him that you get of like, oh, you know, yeah, maybe the rent control isn't great, but he wants to build more housing. It's like, well, one counteracts the other, right? So it just, I don't even know if it nets out to a zero. It's still probably negative, his approach to housing.
I saw Scott Galloway. Mm-hmm. You know who Scott Galloway is? I absolutely despise him.
Okay.
He's
one of your many feuds.
I can't believe you don't know who this is.
Mm-mm.
He's like,
it's hard to keep up with all the
He's this significant. He's like an, I described him in my newsletter last week as an all-purpose podcaster. He actually is almost a liberal Joe Rogan, where he's just like a go-to, like he's always a guest on every cable news program. He's on Bill Maher. He's on The View. He hosts a podcast with Kara Swisher, and he hosts a podcast with Jessica Tarlov.
Oh,
and he hosts
make it stop.
And he's like Jonathan Haidt. He's a tech fatalist about how young, he's like a liberal, maybe a liberal Jordan Peterson is a better way. Young men are falling behind, and here's how we're failing them, which that's a fine subject to discuss. Mm-hmm. But he comes at it from a liberal perspective, like a liberal status perspective. So he's like, why don't mandatory national military service them, or national service of some kind, which is an idea I loathe to my core. Other things of that nature. But anyway, he hates tech billionaires. He hates tech, AI doomer, all that stuff. Don't like it. Don't care for it. But he was saying, you know, he was for the pied-à-terre tax because he wants more taxes than everybody. Then he realized his name was on that list.
Oh, so now he doesn't like it.
They're hunting me in the streets because of what Mamdani has done. I'm like, that's what you get. That's what you get.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really.
The leopard has eaten your face.
Really don't like that guy.
Yeah, I saw him on the Ross Douthat's Sunsetting podcast.
Right, that's where he said the national military service idea. Look,
it'd be a great way to meet people.
Well, there are certainly some young men or young people in general who don't have enough to do, like lacking in purpose, and they should be pushed by friends and family and civic organizations to do more. And if they want to volunteer or even take part in the government,
there are many
programs,
options for you to
they should
this.
Do that. But the idea of making it mandatory, there's also millions of people who adjust perfectly fine from adolescence to adulthood and get jobs and are starting families and creating prosperity. And what you want to put their lives on hold, you want to make them do it.
Right.
And also, who are you? Why don't you get conscripted then if you think it's so good? Because it's like, this would be good for patriotism. Well, join up, my friend.
Yeah.
Maybe put down the podcast for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, practice what you preach. I hate when like old people are trying to further enslave us. Like, what more do you want? Now you want us to work for free?
Yeah.
Well, while we're working for free, we're not making income that you're going to confiscate for your stupid Medicare Advantage program.
Yeah, and Scottsdale Golf Resorts or whatever else, right?
Ugh.
Yeah. Well, it's also just this mistake, I think, that gets made where it's like people who voluntarily do these, to use a term, socially productive things, if we just forced everyone to do that, it would have the same effect.
Right.
Well, of course not, because you're forcing people to do it who wouldn't otherwise
What
do
if
this.
That makes them resentful and hate America more, which is...
Yeah, like, have you ever met someone who's been in the Army for, like, 3 years, you know? Like, sometimes people do that and then go on to college or have a good career or
think
whatever,
about how...
and then sometimes they... Or like, that was the worst experience of my life. I'm going to go back to drinking.
Our
know?
Experience in Nam turned us into libertarians because we saw some things that we only talk about with a bottle by the bedside, spinning that, the roulette gun, you know, just hoping this is the end.
Yeah, we saw some things, some culture, some great food.
met some Asians. Yeah. We'll just leave it at that. Okay. Other things I wanted to discuss... Flock cameras. You want to talk about this too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is Flock cameras hit this was their big discourse week, because it's been really there's was, been yeah. some discourse on them
there's
previously.
The Super Bowl ad, right?
But what caused me to realize they were in the discourse this week is I got invited, or friends of us, or like there were 18 different media, like right of center media organizations, like, let's have a debate about this. Mm. We were arguing about who's going to do it. Show wanted to do what, like everyone, you know, it hits the discourse when someone's like, we're not only one person was like, we're gonna have a debate about this, but like everyone I know wants to have a debate about this. Yeah. That happened yesterday. They hit their discourse stride,
right?
So these are the cameras, the license plate reading software system police are using,
that are
different from just like a red light camera, because red light camera takes a picture of your license plate if you speed through the red light.
Right.
If you commit an infraction, then it takes a picture of your car, which is annoying enough, but, well, whatever. It's annoying, but I see why it is socially desirable.
This is an automated license plate reader that logs everyone's license plate
everywhere. Just, yes.
And then is available for search, right?
Right, by for the police to just scan,
which
is clearly a problem, because that's just warrantless mass surveillance.
Right.
Now, there are a number of incidents already where police have used this data in ways that are just mistaken, where they've gone after the wrong person because of that. I mean, police could do that in any case. So I'm not sure that really counts against the technology. But then there were also cases where they were using the data to stalk or harass someone they didn't like, or an ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And that's real bad.
Up on the website just this morning, our colleague Joe Lancaster has a really interesting look at the Flock cameras. And one of the people he interviews for that story is this woman named Lindsay Isaacs, who a young woman who lives in Florida, who there was this accident on the highway, and the car sped off, and she had the same make and model of the car that caused the accident. It was not her. The police do a little Flock search, see that, her license plate comes up. They go to her apartment, they impound her car for 7 months, and then they arrest her and jail her for 3 vehicular homicides.
Oh my God.
And then they do a rudimentary amount of police work after she's been charged and realize that, you know, her car's not damaged at all. It wasn't the right paint color, X, Y, and Z. And so she spent like a month in jail.
That's insane.
Charged with serious felonies. And before that, having her car taken from her, right? Because of police just thinking that the Flock camera is going to do their job for them. After they arrest her and, you know, serious investigators take a look at this, then they realize she was not at fault. She had nothing to do with this accident. It was someone else who they then go arrest and charge and, you know, convict. I don't know if the actual convictions come down for the crime. But that's what happens when you make... You create a tool that police just default to and think that it'll do their job for them, right?
Yeah. Right, right. Which is bad, which, again, can happen. I mean, police could get it wrong under any circumstance, so...
There was a combination of police incompetence and
right.
using this surveillance. But, I mean, I think this is the problem of when you have a tool that makes incompetence so much easier and potentially so much more devastating, right?
The theory to steel man it is that it will make... It could lend itself toward more competence, right? Basically in two ways. One, which is, I think, correct, but also kind of dystopian, is that, well, if everyone's just being watched all the time, people will commit fewer crimes.
Yeah.
Which is probably true on some level. That, I mean, we've seen this with the presence of the National Guard in D.C. It has not reduced violent crime, because most of the violent crime... you know, despite your occasional stabbings and whatever in the city proper, is between gang-type people on their turf.
Mm-hmm.
The National Guard are not there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not deterring that. They are deterring robberies.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to grab old lady's purse or you're less likely to do it if there's an authority figure standing there.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're all being watched all the time, probably that would have a prohibitive effect on crime to some degree, but also we quite obviously don't want to be watched all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like in our DNA. We don't want that. We don't assert that the government has the right to, in some kind of like Chinese authoritarian way, surveil us at all times, citizen. Like,
yeah, why don't we all just wear air tags and have little pain rays when we think about committing a crime?
Right, because we don't want the government just knowing what we're doing and where we're going at all times. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't want that information to be publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, well, you have nothing to hide if you're doing anything wrong. Like, we don't want to be surveilled.
Right.
If they want to surveil you, they need to get a warrant.
Yeah.
Or they want to look at your phone. I mean, and this is...
This is why individualized suspicion, I mean, this is a constitutional requirement, but it's also a guide for good police work. Because if you just have a mass surveillance tool, then you can generate very quickly a list of potential suspects. But then, you know, you think this gives you more insight into the crime than it actually does. And so you're not dedicating your resources to people mm-hmm. who you have more information about who have actually maybe committed this crime, right? You're just like, oh, right. The license plate, checked a similar car, let's go arrest this person.
Right. Now that's the other function of this, which in theory could be used to reduce or solve crimes. I've known a number of people who've had their car stolen in D.C. And there are cases where, because you have something, an electronic in the car that's trackable, you know exactly where it is. My understanding is the police do not generally go get it back.
Yeah.
It's just they're not even going right. to try to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just gone. You're going to have the insurance company reimburse you for the car. So if we're not actually going to use this technology to recover the stolen materials, then I don't know what the point is.
Right.
One of our colleagues at Reason introduced me to the term anarcho-tyranny,
mm-hmm.
which is just
the
law-abiding citizens are surveilled and screened and subject. I mean, we run into this a little bit with gun control measures.
Mm-hmm.
The non-law-abiding, dangerous people while this technology theoretically allows us to police them, they're not going to be policed because they're difficult to deal with.
Right.
You know, in the gun-free zone, right, you're a law-abiding gun owner, you know you can't take your gun in here, so you are following the law, and you're being policed, even though you don't really need to be policed, because you're going to use your gun responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
The criminal or mass shooter or bad crazy person, they are not going, they're going to take their gun in anyway, because they are bad,
yeah.
and they're not going to be policed for it. So only the people who are responsible are going to suffer under this kind of thing.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
The police default to enforcing the laws that are easiest for them to enforce.
Right.
And so when you have laws and surveillance tools that cover everyone, they'll go for the most visible
right.
people as opposed to maybe the most serious right. wrongdoers.
And the most, well-behaved.
Right. Why does law enforcement love Flock? Because they think it's a cheaper way to do their job, right? It has nothing to do necessarily with reducing the crime rate, because why do they care? Or protecting citizens. Not really. It's just about it's a cheaper line item in their budget. Yeah, the term anarcho-tyranny, it's tough because it, I think, is actually a very useful concept that describes a lot of government behavior, but also has a very checkered lineage. The person who came up with this term is a man named Sam Francis.
Mm.
And I would actually recommend people go back and read the original anarcho-tyranny essay, because it's very interesting because it could almost be a Reason magazine article. He brings up some examples of North Carolina, they're letting out a bunch of people because their prisons are overcrowded, so they're letting criminals go, and at the same time they're like tightening seatbelt regulations or whatever.
Right.
Or instead of going after child predators who've actually committed crimes, he has an example of just like some bus driver who bought child pornography or something like that, right? Civil asset
harmless stuff.
Yeah, not. I wouldn't say harmless, but
I'm joking.
What's another? Oh yeah, he brings up civil forfeiture as well. It's like, oh, instead of finding the actual drug dealers and criminals, let's just take the let's just stop cars and see who has the cash, right?
Yeah.
So I think it actually is a very useful term. The trouble is that Sam Francis was a raving racist.
Was he?
Yeah, he's an extreme racist. And you can't, once you know that, you can't read that essay and not see the kind of like,
why aren't we policing black? Why are we policing white people when we should be policing black
right,
people?
Right, and there's a certain kind of alt-right, all the George Soros prosecutors are letting the criminals mm-hmm. run rampant because it's about, they're using crime to control us as another mm-hmm. tool of the tyranny, right? That's mm-hmm. kind of where his version of anarcho-tyranny goes, is that crime is itself a tool that tyrants mm-hmm. use to control the law-abiding populace.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think the reason that it has you know, lived on beyond anyone knowing who Sam Francis is, because it does describe an actual real thing. Like a great example of anarcho-tyranny was in San Francisco. Lots of, you know, I hear it's gotten better, but you have a lot of low-level street crime, public order type crimes, right? For instance, you know, graffiti and vandalism was a big deal. And so how did the city respond to this in 2022, 2023? They started fining store owners when they got their storefronts graffitied or vandalized for not fixing it up. Because it's like, oh, this is blighted.
Oh, my God.
It's like, well, why don't you get the person who did it. The vandalism?
Oh,
right.
God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like, well, Mom Donnie said last week that he was taking efforts to police, right, people selling... Because the scooters or the bikes or the motorized things that are illegal in New York mm-hmm. City, or not even illegal, they're being used to run people over. The way they're driving them is dangerous. Okay, we'll just stop the people from using them that way. But now he wants the retailers who sell these things because he loves to go after Amazon and it's
got to go after the suppliers.
The suppliers,
right? Yeah,
can just go after the people.
So on Flock, I do wonder. I wonder if the argument that like it's mass surveillance, we're living in a panopticon society, is that going to be enough to crack down on these? Yeah, I think for two. One, because the police are wedded to this technology because it's cheaper for them and it means that they can be lazy easier, right?
We're just going into the panopticon. It's
everyone,
inevitable.
Everyone has... Like, you see this when it comes to arguments about private surveillance, if you want to use that term, right? You could use, kind of like left libertarian types will criticize big tech for, you're giving them all your data. They're using this for, you know, they're selling it and whatever else.
They'll also criticize me.
Yeah, right. Which is what is unforgivable.
I'm not popular with that group.
But, you know, the argument against this is like, well, there are many tools available to you, encryption and VPNs and whatever else, or even just not using these services if you want to protect your privacy. And no one does it because they just like the convenience. And I think it's something similar with mass surveillance, where even if these things have a high error rate and lead to a lot of people being arrested or charged or whatever else when they shouldn't be, the impact on most people most of the time is incidental and even imperceptible. Yeah. And as we get more and more used to surveillance, people will just care less and less about that. In fact, I'm actually kind of surprised that Flock has become, Flock is the main vendor of this technology, but there's other companies that sell it.
Well,
I'm surprised that it's become as controversial as it has, given how quickly society, just people have, you know, acclimated themselves to being watched all the time.
I mean, there is something fundamentally different, different in a constitutional sense, different in every sense between, yes, it's true that most of us are carrying a device that can be used to track us by a private company, and we've chosen to do that. And if the government wants that information, they have to get a warrant, or they have to ask the company for it or something. And that is an important step that differentiates the government itself using a technology to track us at all times.
Oh, I of course completely agree.
Yeah,
and that
makes it different.
Facebook is not the FBI.
No.
Of course. I completely agree with that. Yeah. But that's something I've changed my mind on a little bit. I do think it's not quite the right term, but like mass surveillance in like a private for-profit sense of like your data helps us sell you products.
Yeah.
Leads people maybe to care less about government
people
surveillance
clearly
as well.
Don't care enough.
Yeah.
And look, there are benefits that I think I brought this up on the podcast before. There's no more serial killers. You can't get away with just driving down the highway, picking up hitchhikers, murdering huge numbers of them, and no one catches you. Is not a phenomenon. It's weird when there's some kind of, I mean, the categories of violent crime we're not solving are not because we're not capable of solving them. It's just the police don't want to go to that neighborhood and talk to people, but they kind of know who did it,
mm-hmm.
right? Always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not, oh my God, 8 people have gone missing and we have no idea what happened. Like, that just doesn't happen anymore because there's always, like, it's, you know, that journalist's mother who went missing, Nancy
Guffrey. Right?
Guffrey.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very weird case and a weird situation because we have no idea what happened and no evidence at all. Mm-hmm. It sticks out because it is so unusual now for something like that to happen.
Yeah.
And that is the benefit of having so many cameras everywhere. Mm-hmm. The downside is, and I worry about these things being used for embarrassment. You know, Niall brought this up on Rising today. You know, what if the police do something wrong to you and you want to pursue some legal action against them and they go, you know, we have video footage of you, you know, going to the sex store to buy something embarrassing. You want that, you know, the opportunities to blackmail people, harass people is all bad. Now, they are putting in, I just saw it. So I think the best we can actually hope for is just stricter limits put on the use of this technology. Mm. Tim Burchett or some Republicans want to ban it. I think that's just like not going to happen. Mm-hmm. How long the video footage is collected and stored, it auto deletes. I think they're agreeing to move it down to 7 days and then it auto deletes unless like you flag the footage for, you know, involvement in a criminal matter. That's a better thing. That it creates a record of how the police are accessing it for accountability. I mean, those are all things that I think that's the best we could do is limit the opportunities for abuse because it's just we're not putting this genie back in this bottle.
Yeah, it's difficult too from a constitutional perspective because, you know, so the Supreme Court has been
good on this stuff
For the most part. So they've drawn a pretty hard line when it comes to
unreasonable searches.
Sort of. There's a couple factors here. So one is like a principle of like physical intrusion, right? So there's a Supreme Court case a while ago where the police put a GPS tracker on a guy's car, right? Mm-hmm. And used that to convict him of a crime. And they got this, he got his conviction kicked out. And Scalia was, on the side of the Fourth Amendment advocates in this case because he's like, okay, This is a search by putting something physically invasive on someone's property. That's a search, right? But then there's this other aspect, which is like an expectation of privacy.
Yes,
right.
And you don't have one
if you're in public
when you're out on the road,
right? Yeah. So you can have surveillance cameras everywhere because hey, you're out in public, right? And then there's a whole other factor of the third party doctrine, right? Which is like once you've given your information to a third party, then it's no longer your information and the government can get it from them, right? And the Supreme Court has not been very good on that either.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, it's an interesting moment for Flock to become controversial as well because for the most part, crime is falling everywhere, right? Of course, the advocates of Flock say that this is because of Flock, right? Oh, look at all the more surveillance. They're catching more cases. That doesn't deal with when they get it wrong, and B, it doesn't speak to whether how many, you know, Flock, the company itself says, oh, you know, Flock has been useful in finding 10,000 missing persons, right? How many of those people would you have found without this invasive technology?
And how many of missing person numbers are so fake anyway? Most of these people are not truly missing.
Right. They just didn't tell someone where they were.
Right. Or they ran away.
Yeah. But what's interesting, so because crime is falling, you know, the advocates for this technology can say, oh, look how useful it is. Let's keep using this technology. But then in a weird way, it also makes it kind of more controversial because then crime becomes a lower salience issue. And so people then have more heightened concerns about surveillance. Whereas if like, you know, we had 90s level of crime, regardless of whether Flock was effective or not, I think people would be like, yes, more, you know, whatever we need, right? Yeah. We got to get the violence down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where this issue goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's flocked up.
That's what we're going to change the name of the podcast to.
Waiting a long time to say that.
Finally, it's your moment.
Finally.
Say it again.
Caroline Leavitt has stepped down.
Yes.
Leavitt has left it.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, see, you wrote that down there.
Oh, yes. She was pretty good at her job, which is communicating the president's views.
And being kind of shameless and lying.
Yeah, that is the job of the press secretary. It's weird.
100%.
It's a hard job to, like, job is it itself kind of morally suspect.
Yes.
She was very good at it. That's an indictment.
I would say so.
Like, Karine Jean-Pierre was bad at it.
She was very bad at her job.
Extremely bad at it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that she was a particularly honest person. She was just bad.
She was incompetent enough that
and
she couldn't.
And also dishonest.
She couldn't lie effectively.
Her lies were not effective.
Yeah, her lies were very blatant, and she was also often just kind of. She didn't have the confidence to be a
she didn't know what
press
she was
secretary.
About.
She had to go to her big.
You have
binders.
To know what you're talking about so that you can say the other thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Caroline Leavitt, she was great at her job. Jen Psaki, she was a great press
She's
secretary
a pro.
Too.
She's a pro.
Yeah, she was great at the pivot, you know?
Yes.
And not answering a question and all that.
Yes, and now she excels at disseminating progressive talking points as a talk show host on MSNBC.
She does.
Her role has not changed. And maybe Caroline will walk that same path. She's leaving because she has young kids, wants to spend more time with them.
That is a much better use of her time.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
She did... Her important contribution to how the White House pool, the press pool works, is notable in that she was, and maybe Trump is the one or someone else who initiated this or suggested it, but bringing in the influencers and the not just congressional White House reporters for major outlets. And that was a big step.
And a positive one.
A positive.
At least a recognition that this is where media is at.
Yeah.
And one that I think, you know, obviously one reason the Trump administration did this is because there's a lot of pro-Trump influencers and whatever else, and they wanted those people to have access too. Unintended consequence maybe is a lot of them were big like Epstein people or whatever else.
Yes.
And have now also started to do actual, like at least give good pushback to the administration on a lot of these things. I mean, a great example of this is their attempts to kind of like whittle down the Pentagon press pool, right? They had some stipulations about if you're going to have a Pentagon press pass, you can't report on this.
You can't report anything like we don't want you to report. It was the stupidest thing ever. Like,
exactly.
Well, or if you got like information from like, brother, that's on you. You got to get your Pentagon in line so it's not leaking information to us.
Right.
Right. You can police your people all you want, but you can't police us.
Yeah. And it also didn't stop Gateway Pundit and Laura Loomer from being like, why are you giving money to Qatar?
I love Laura these days. Laura Loomer's coming along.
I really
appreciate her. Her and I have made kind of the same Ukraine pivot, so it's.
I've noticed this.
It's been nice.
Got to follow the dollars.
No, I ain't getting paid by nobody except our donors.
Thank you.
Our supporters, friends, and believers in liberty.
And if anyone wants to pitch a product on this show, please let us know.
Yeah, could be Zen. I want a Hawk and energy drink.
Oh, that'd be good.
I've gotten into these Celsius waters.
Ooh, yeah, those things are pretty hardcore.
They're really good. Yeah.
I like how every new...
I'm an addict to that.
Yeah, I like how every new energy drink will come along and be like, you know, special formula for 5 times extra boost or whatever. It's like, oh, you just added more caffeine.
Yeah. Yeah. 10 times extra boost. That last one, that's for gay homosexuals. Don't drink that. This one is real manly energy. Man stuff. Well, it works on me every time.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
It's good stuff. I try to limit myself to one of these things a week, mostly because they're just so gosh darn expensive in the commissary at my other place of employment. So I get one, and I have my cup of coffee, and that's just
you're off to the races.
A caffeine orgy. I feel a lot more alert.
Wow.
It's like you're leveling up. You're evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Squirtle to Wartortle right before your eyes. Yeah, boom! Boom!
You know, as there's different types of alcoholics, the person who's drinking all the time versus the person who's like not drinking all the time, but a hardcore binger.
Right.
Different types of caffeine addicts.
Yes.
I feel like I'm opting towards you're the caffeine binger.
Yeah.
I got to be drinking a Diet Coke every second of the day kind of caffeine drinker. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And with alcohol, obviously, I'm drinking every moment I'm not on camera or speaking to someone, obviously. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just how it goes.
You're doing pretty well. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm keeping it together. Yeah. Who would be your press secretary?
Oh.
Who's qualified to give dispatches on behalf of Emperor Christian Britschke?
Yeah, that's good. Well, yeah. I mean, if I were, I would probably tap you to be my press secretary.
I'd be pretty good
secretary.
At it, I have to say. I would do a good job. I think I could lie shamelessly if I had no soul. or was paid tons of money to do so.
I would trust you to do that. I do worry about your own loyalty to my political project.
Oh, I'd be totally loyal. I can be bought off.
Yeah, okay, oh, sure. Yeah. Grand Vizier.
Yeah. Oh, but what if I start whispering in the ear?
Exactly, exactly.
My liege, they are out to get you. Surely your most trusted and dedicated servant would never put your interests at cross purposes with his own. Yes. Yes. And she's like stroking your hair. You're aging before me. Yeah. Yes. No. My lord cannot hold court today, but he has allowed me to sit in his chair. Yeah, that's right. What you'd have to worry about with me.
I'm sorry, we can't take a question from the New York Times as you want us to go to war with Saruman.
Yeah, but he's always been our friend and ally. Failing times. Yeah, you're fake news. Mm-hmm. Friend and ally. Get out.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
I'd be a great
How about you? Who would you pick?
Oh, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know that you're the man for this.
I don't think I could do it. I would fold like a grease plate under the pressure.
More pig references?
I didn't say it was pig grease. Oh. But of course, what other animal produces grease?
Yeah, well. I don't know who I'd have. Who from around here could I get to do my...
A reason?
Yeah. Maybe I make Natalie. Well, I make Natalie do everything on my behalf.
Yeah, she'd be a loyal servant of your administration, Suave administration.
Yeah, I think I pick her for that and all other Robbie-related duties.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to put her in charge of my. She manages my professional schedule so well. With like Robbie, you're talking to this person this time. Robbie, you're doing this event. I'd love to put her in charge of like my social schedule. Like, when is my mother coming to visit me again? But yeah, I can't do that, unfortunately, because she like, has a full-time job running the YouTube
tough.
Page and other
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I feel like Selena Gomez's, you know.
Gary? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, right. I need a Gary. Obviously, I want a twink for that. But I don't know. What other propaganda ministers we know? See, libertarians are too honest is what I would say if I'm being charitable, and dogmatic if I was not feeling charitable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like no libertarian wants to be a propagandist because they're like, well, actually, you know, according to the non-aggression principle, that is invalid. Right? Right.
That would actually be a good way of stalling on questions, right? Oh, you know who I would get to be my press secretary? The guy who danced naked at the LP convention
in
2016.
Of course.
Right? Be like, so there's been serious allegations of misconduct. Oh, here he goes again.
Just start stripping down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would get that.
I was thinking of him and the but I hate these stunt candidates. Who's the guy with the boot on his head?
Vermin Supreme.
This is not funny to me anymore.
Yeah, well, all politicians are stunt candidates now, so it's kind of, you know.
There's apparently this Lord Binface.
From the UK, yeah.
Niall was going on and on about it, and I did not listen to a word of it because it was about a joke candidate and it was about a different country, so who cares?
Right.
But the guy, the Lord Binface, does have a pretty cool costume.
It does, yeah. It's a giant bin on his head.
Yeah. It's like a
Vader.
Or as
a trash can, as we would call it here in the United States.
What do they call it? A lift? A flat?
A lorry? Yeah. A rubbish bin?
The contempt we have for them.
Yeah, it is funny in the UK because you get these joke candidates because a tradition there is when they like read out the final vote count, all the candidates have to be on stage. And so if you remember when Boris Johnson became prime minister, Lord Binface was up there on the stage as well with him. So.
And the way their elections work are so random because this is Nigel Farage is under some scandal, a very minor financial scandal. So what he did is resign his seat and then run for it immediately. So they had to schedule another election, but he's running for it. Instead of he's like, well, if they reelect me, that proves the people don't think I did anything wrong.
Yeah.
So that's why, and the other candidate, the other like parties are boycotting this because they said this is absurd.
Yeah.
So they're not putting forth candidates. So it's just him and Lord Binface. So that's how this situation came about, which is patently absurd.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Man, Nigel Farage, that's an interesting character there. Yeah. He is an interesting person to watch as like the right has become less libertarian, mm-hmm. right? He is a good barometer of that. Because and also
he was kind of libertarian and then not.
Yeah, he was. In fact, and also like the primary issues that united libertarians with the right have either been resolved or have the issues have moved on. And so now that we're there's, you know, a bigger gulf between us. So like when he was, you know, his big splash on the scene, his primary political accomplishment was Brexit, right? But since, you know, he's gone on to become a leader of the Reform Party, which is a conservative party, very anti-immigrant party, and clearly we have less in common with that now. So
That's just the direction it's going.
It is the direction in which it's going.
So our colleague Stephanie Slade has a new book about fusionism, the splits that are occurring, different factions, the right and libertarians, that's available soon. You should pre-order it if you're listening to this.
Yes, I'm actually very, we got some copies in the office, so I'm eager.
Yeah, you were trying to procure one earlier today. We don't know if we're allowed to open
that?
The box.
They're like, we don't know if that's for, you know, VIPs. Been hearing about this book for 3 fucking years. Like, can I read a copy? Yeah.
I guess the flaw camera caught you.
Damn.
Trying to sneak a copy.
Right? Can't get away with it.
What else did I write down here? I wanted to talk about, I got to talk about House of the Dragon a little bit, which I know you didn't watch.
Okay, yeah, that's a show?
It's the Game of Thrones sequel show. You know what it is.
It sounds like an Eastern European man asking for directions at the zoo to where the reptiles are. Well, with the House of the Dragon.
Where is House of Dragon? I take Ilias the House of Dragon. Yeah.
I bring funnel cake into House of Dragon or no? Anyway, sorry.
In House of Dragon, Dragon, watch you. I don't know. Dragon Ride You, probably, is the Game of Thrones sequel show. You know what it is.
I watched the first season, which I thought was okay.
The first season was really good. The second season meandered. Mm-hmm. It meandered too much.
Salamandered.
The third season, which belongs in the House of Dragon. I come to see Salamander, not meander.
Very good.
This season has been uneven and has deviated so wildly from the source material that George R. R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones, is furious with the...
He disowned it, right?
He's disowned
it. Disavowed it.
Basically. And he's just like...
Was he right to do that?
Of course. Anytime there's any deviation from the source material whatsoever, the creator is right. Mm. Every time. And so many needless deviations. There have been deviations that George R. R. Martin has stood by, even in Game of Thrones, that were necessary for the plot... That were fine. That consolidations of characters. Mm-hmm. Great example is in the second season of Game of Thrones. Some great Arya is in Harrenhal and she comes under Tywin Lannister's employ, and they have a lot of witty banter together. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in the books because he already moves out, and she's actually under Roose Bolton's care briefly, which is terrifying. But this was a consolidation of those plot lines that worked fine. Mm-hmm. They gave Gendry, when Melisandre wants to have him sacrificed for Stannis, that's actually a different bastard child of King Robert.
That was another good consolidation.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. And George R. R. Martin's fine with that. Mm-hmm. They've done changes that don't make any sense and that are needless, and I am against all of them.
Well, fill me in.
All that said, I actually didn't want to complain about that.
Okay.
The finale...
Yeah, here we are.
The finale was really good, I thought, and broadly brought me back on.
Okay.
So the conceit of this of the show is, you know, it's this civil war between Rhaenyra and the Black faction and the Green faction. It's Targaryen civil war, dragons fighting each other.
Is there a good guy and a bad guy in the civil war, or is it kind of like our civil war?
Where there's no clear good guys and bad guys, and maybe even a side that was, you know, mostly invaded and destroyed, but, you know, who knows?
Who knows?
In the source material, though, because the source material is just like a history of what happened and not really a narrative. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like inconsistencies even in what happened because, well, this historian says it happened this way and that it was mostly the Green's fault. And this historian, who's more partial to Rhaenyra, says, well, she was justified because of the XYZ. That's what makes it an interesting history. Mm-hmm. Narratively, they've just decided that Rhaenyra is the main character and is good. And the other people are bad, and so they're on her side, which actually makes her, because I always rooted for her side, ironically, because I felt she was justified in kind of being evil a little bit, whereas now it's just, that feels unsatisfying because she's just good and almost a little bit boring and, like, unwilling to do what it takes to, like, beat the other people. But she finally was pushed enough to do her Daenerys heel turn. You know, Daenerys goes crazy in the Game of Thrones finale, basically.
Targaryen madness.
Which is very annoying, because while that is a perfectly good plot decision to do, and I actually never liked Daenerys very much and supported that, it happens over the course of one episode for no reason. And she then, you know, burns down all of her enemies when they've surrendered and there's no longer a reason to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it's needless and makes no plot sense and is part of the absolute incoherence of the end of Game of Thrones.
It's like the Dresden bombings.
Insulting and, like, should be redone because it's so stupid.
Yeah.
In this case, Rhaenyra finally goes a little bit over the deep end and is, like, ready to start burning people. And it feels completely justified. Like, yes, obviously you have to just kill them all now. She has tried to deal with them. She has tried, like, and they're still putting up schemes. Earlier in the season, she said, she won, and they said, okay, we surrender. She's like, okay, I have to take your prince hostage. They give him a prince, and then she finds out they betray, that's not the real kid. And the army that she was treating with has occupied one of her cities and is still planning war against him. Okay, you have to send the dragon to kill them all now. Like, it's not, and they're still offering plots. Like, well, what if we rule this? You can't negotiate with these people anymore. The Pope type figure, the head of the church, refuses to coronate her. So, which he did early in the season. And I'm like, who are you, man? So finally she just killed him. She's like, okay, I've given you every opportunity. Now I'm stabbing you to death. Let's find someone who's going to coronate me. Yes, it's come to this. Sorry, it's come to this, but it has. So I was like, yes, burn these people down, burn them. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm rooting for the bad guy.
Sounds like it.
But the other people are just such craven assholes and cheaters and liars, and they can't be dealt with reasonably, and they all have to go. So I was pretty happy that we're finally starting to meet fire with fire.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Great song.
But it's different from Daenerys, because Daenerys doesn't need to do it.
Right.
They surrender. She won. It's over.
She's just a tyrant.
She's just crazy.
Yeah. This is why I actually, I liked the first season all right, but this is why I stopped watching it, because it ends with, so during the first season you have, who's the king?
Viserys.
Yes. Who is like a refreshing character, because he is not
crazy.
He's not a psychopath. He's not a very good king. But it's a time of peace, right?
Yes.
And he's not a psychopath. He actually like does care about his family, and when he's trying to like patch things together towards the end of his reign, like appeals to their, you know, familial bonds and love for him, right? I'm like, okay, this is actually kind of endearing, right? But then he dies and that all goes out the window, and then everyone starts killing each other, and everyone by the end of the first season has done something unforgivable, and so it's like there's no one to root for here. There's no good,
which you're not really supposed to root for someone, because it's not a narrative.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's a history.
There's only so much nihilism I can take, right? And
it's
so that's why I didn't go through with the second season, which also people said was not very good.
The second season was very uneven. Yeah. This one, and we'll move on from this in a second. There was also a great, Christian Cole is one of the most hateable characters. He's like Rhaenyra's protector, and then joins the other side, and is actually kind of the catalyst for them even having a civil war. And his motivations aren't very well understood in the history, because you don't see it from his perspective, but it's just like all his fault this happens, and he's just such an asshole. And in this, it kind of, he is still such an asshole, but it like comes that like he's sick of being bossed around by these women, and he knows it's over and he's going to die and he's going to get killed by dragons at some point, but he's just like wants to die with his sword in his hand, sticking it to him. And I'm like, okay, that's a motivation. And then they shoot him to death with arrows 2 seconds after he makes that speech.
Great.
And it's like,
great.
But he got what he deserved too. But it was
always
so nihilistic.
I always supported him. I have to support any character named Christian in a show. I have to support.
Oh, yeah,
so, you know, there's a certain name, you know, fraternity. Yeah, I mean, did you ever feel like you had to support the good King Rob, you know?
Rob Stark. I did. I liked Rob Stark. Well, I really like King
Robert Baratheon. Yeah.
He's another great king, because he's a bad king, but he's not evil or crazy. He doesn't like people suffering or violence. He tends to just kind of like not listen when his advisors are doing evil things because he doesn't like it. He doesn't want to be involved in it.
I want to get drunk and watch. I want to get drunk with him. Horny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good King Robert.
He's a Charles II. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's all we want. That's all we want. All we want is Charles II regaling you with tales of hiding amongst the commoners
in a tree.
Yes. And can you believe they thought I was a peasant? Good stuff.
That's a little more French than British, right?
Yeah, it's hard to do.
And the hair, yeah. Oh, we don't have to.
So great. All right, I hit you with one. Hit me with, you were going to hit me with something I didn't know anything about. I can't remember
which one
was
that. I think it was the Flock stuff.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know about that. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to tell me about something I didn't watch. No.
Well, I told you to read Joe Lancaster's feature.
Okay. All right, well. Oh, another pop culture thing, though, I want to talk about, if you'll indulge me.
What other choice do I have?
Very little. Very little.
This isn't a booth. It's a prison.
it's a prison. The prison's in here.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Free your mind. Take the red pill or the blue pill.
I got them right
there. Yeah, you got them right there. This is a nightmare you can wake up from.
Okay.
Yeah. So with that said, Avatar The Last Airbender, the cartoon show for children that also some adults like me like, finally had a sequel. It had a sequel movie event that, you know, this Aang, Zuko, Katara, waterbending, firebending. You know, you're familiar with this property.
Yeah. I watched the cartoon.
You watched it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they made, the original creators are back in charge of the IP to some degree and made a little, like, movie that's on, I don't know, Netflix or something. It's not on Netflix. It's one of those that's set, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years later. They're now, like, young adults instead of kids. And so it's set between this and between Korra, and it was really good. It had a really good animation, it had a nice story. They're dealing with a past avatar and this person. It was a good, satisfying, entertaining, fit within the world, really cool animation, some really great visuals. I liked it a lot. It was really good. One thing, though, that stuck out to me, they recast all the voice actors, which to some degree is fine. Aang is voiced by, Aang is the airbender, the main character, is, you know, a preteen or young, and now he's a young man, so his voice should sound different. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Person they got for Katara was close-ish. Sokka, maybe close-ish. The person who was Toph, I also couldn't tell the difference. But Zuko, Prince Zuko, has a very distinctive voice, voiced by Dante Basco, who's Rufio in the Hook show, a Hook movie from forever ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's who it is.
Oh, cool.
He has a very distinctive voice. So when he's voiced by someone else, it just like sticks out. And I'm like, okay, that was kind of a weird choice. But he didn't want to do it anymore. Then I found out they did this for woke reasons.
They
thought it was wrong to have non-Asians voice these characters. And that is pretty absurd to me, especially as we've just gone through the Odyssey casting thing, where you and I were both critical of the conservative notion that Lupita Nyong'o shouldn't play Helen of Troy, which we said was not true. And in fact, I liked Lupita Nyong'o very much in the movie. But for all the same reasons that a black woman can play this fictional, quasi-fictional character in a real world but also made up fantastical environment applies exactly the same, if not more so, to this totally made up but, you know, Asian-ish inspired place. You do not need Asian people to prepare. Like, that is such an insulting idea that it actually made me mad at the thing.
Yeah.
I found that out after. I was like, I wonder why they use different voices.
Yeah, this is some 90 proof race essentialism too, because it's not even. With live action characters, you can at least say, okay, this is a, you know, Asian fantasy. We should hire Asian actors to play the people.
Right.
Okay? Because that will help with the audience's suspense of disbelief or whatever else.
Zuko is not Asian. Actors. He's from the Fire Nation. Yeah. right. And they're voice actors. Some the Katara and Sokka aren't even, it's kind of like Eskimo culture.
I think you're supposed to say Inuit.
Yeah. Fuck me. But.
Yeah, that's completely absurd. Yeah, the war isn't over.
Stupid. And I thought this is some woke one bullshit.
Because you see, this is we believe in neutral principles and putting the audience first. Everyone else believes in no white people or only white people.
Yes. And again, if it was done for, if Dante Basco absolutely didn't want to do it, okay, get somebody else, but maybe do an impression. They got that. It's the guy from The Walking Dead, Steven Yeun.
Yeah.
Who has voiced a different character in Avatar, but like he's very, and it's fine for a different character, but he just doesn't sound like Dante Basco at all. He has a very soft voice. Mm-hmm. It took me out of it.
Woke One is back, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, this is a little Revenge of Woke One-ish. Mm. And I liked it otherwise. Didn't ruin it for me.
Yeah.
But I just want some compromises. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted more Asian people voicing more Asian characters, get some new characters, it's fine. But then they had, and then actually come to think of it, it was the guy who plays Drask in Guardians of the Galaxy, the big guy. What is that guy's name? You know who I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know his name.
Yeah, he's a big like wrestler, ex-wrestler type. He voiced the bad guy. He's not Asian. He's Hispanic. I don't care. I don't care what people are.
Yeah.
Are you right for the role?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the original voice cast was right for the role because those are iconic characters and an iconic voice acting that we all love.
Yeah, but no, they ruined it.
Yeah. All right. That's all. That's all my tangents for the day.
No, that's truly regrettable. Again, the culture war never stops.
It upset me.
You think you've won. You think we've had a little bit of social peace, and here it comes roaring back.
These people come back to power. Wait for woke too.
Yeah.
You know, AOC is trying to chalk this. This is what she, the controversial comments that were over the weekend.
She said woke one was crazy.
Yeah. With like a shrug and a like, oopsies.
Yeah.
Yes, woke one was crazy. You were a prime driver and participant in it.
And now you're just like, oh, yeah, that was a bad idea. Yeah.
I would love to hear her go into more detail about what specifically she thought was crazy, which she'll never do.
Do you have a go-to example of like this was woke insanity from the bad old days?
I have to refresh my. There's so many. I don't know. Do you have one? What should we go? There's so many. I mean the campus ones, just like someone getting. I remember reading a microaggression report where a member of the staff at the cafeteria, presumably like an older, not college educated person, was written up for some microaggression. Oh, what was it? For saying something like maternal.
Oh no.
That would be
big mistake.
Offensive.
Big mistake.
Because men, you know, not women don't just work in a cooking role or something like that.
Right. There's one, I believe you covered this, where an anti-war activist said we have to man up and fight this war.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so many good ones. But it's not. It would come right back.
Yeah. It's tough because there's just so many, you know. It's like when Mr. Burns has all the diseases and so, you know, no one particular one is killing him. The thing that was going around Twitter this week was the editing of Roald Dahl to take
over. Oh, God, that was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Augustus Gloop is just enormous, not enormously fat.
Yeah.
The Trunch Bowl, they can't describe that vicious as a...
Yeah.
Can I say that?
No. I guess we'll find out.
I might have to get bleeped for that.
Yeah.
But she's a villainous character, such an iconic villainous character.
Right.
I thought you were going to say we were recalling the controversy over Li Fong that was trending. His moment of he's an independent journalist when he got run out of The Intercept because one of his colleagues accused him of being obsessed with black on black crime. When I'm sure what he actually said was that, well, you know, if you talk to black people in like high crime neighborhoods. Right, he interviewed
that was literally that was literally it. He interviewed a black man who was concerned about crime.
Yeah, yeah.
And who was concerned about anti-black racism,
the looting and the rioting due to George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And he had a colleague accuse him of being a racist, and everyone lined up at the place lined up against him.
Right,
shamefully, publicly, in public.
Yep,
in public.
Yeah, very. That was you know peak 2020 stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Some staff members of the New York Times. A terrific publication that we should all hold in esteem, particularly for its diverse and exciting opinion page.
I hope she sees this, dude.
Anyway, when the staff revolted against the Tom Cotton op-ed on sending in federal
troops. Right, and fired the editor of that column.
On grounds that it was dangerous
it
to
was,
black people. To
it was
have
endangering
that,
them.
People of color.
Right. Mm-hmm.
An op-ed that I don't agree with, but that a clear majority of the country agreed.
Right.
With.
Yeah. Oh, how about the Kevin Williamson firing from the Atlantic? That was a good one. Because that was also, was it not predicated
it was abortion.
On
abortion? He was being against
well,
abortion.
So I remember, yeah, he
hang
had
him.
Made, yeah, he made some, not necessarily serious, but, bad comments, you could say, about how to deal with women who have abortions. And then he was fired from the Atlantic immediately. And there was a big struggle session, right, where he was just hired. And then Jeffrey Goldberg has to talk to the staffers about,
the struggle session is really, mm-hmm. I mean, like what they did at, Evergreen College with the Brett Weinstein, who subsequently became completely insane. But, with the president of the university, making like holding him hostage effectively, but he's a voluntary hostage because he just can't say no to these this baseball bat wielding blue haired group of ambiguously gendered people.
Yeah.
It was a crazy time.
Yeah. We forget
that French, that reign of terror.
We forget what it was like because there would be something would happen. You would miss the initial controversy and you wouldn't even notice it if it happened. And then it would be this person like just attracts all these quote tweets of like, I can't even believe we're having to debate this violence. My rights aren't up for debate. And you would just
not my job to educate you
exactly about what this person did that was a supposedly violent. And then they would have to come do some groveling apology, and then they would nuke their Twitter account, and they would get fired or whatever else. And then it was on to the next flavor of the week. Yeah.
On that front, I know you didn't read it yet, but this Tyler Austin Harper article in The Atlantic. This is a guy, writer for The Atlantic, very talented writer. Hits on some culturally libertarian themes sometimes, big free speech guy. He was a professor at Bates College for a period of time, and he's now finally writing about his experience there as a black man who immediately concedes he was probably hired for DEI reasons or affirmative action reasons, and quit, and eventually quit because the wokeness was suffocating. He had the incidents he recounts are just classic woke one of being forced to participate in like Martin Luther King Remembrance Month type events that he has no interest in doing and he is only being asked to do because he's black from like the good meaning white liberals. Talking to DEI consultants who are just shrieking hysteria about things that are obviously not, like, there is not a lot of violence against black people at this idyllic, college in Maine or wherever it is. And just the idea that, he's warned at one point that one of his students is a white supremacist. He's like, well, that's a very serious thing to say. And it was that this student had a dispute with a black roommate or something and had threatened to go to the police. And the implication was that because in every interaction with the police and a black person, the police will kill that person. He's trying to have his roommate murdered or his friend or whatever. And
it's terrible.
Yeah. And Harper's like, that's just ridiculous. Yeah. So he just gets more and more frustrated. And then so frustrated with the things they're going to make the department do in order to root out the white supremacy inherent, the way those people would talk, the heads of these universities, white supremacy is rooted in our institution. It is in every fiber of our being. Every breath we take exudes Nazism. And we will do the work to get rid of this by adding all these, diversity requirement classes that he was like, these are going to introduce error because they're going to be taught by people who have no idea what they're talking about. Also, it seemed clearly to distract to him. It's distracting from the university's labor problems that like the adjunct faculty are way underpaid and blah, blah, blah. And instead of treating them better or lowering their course load or hiring them into the university, it's going to be best we can do is more DEI classes.
Right. Yeah.
It's a pretty even for me, who's seen, you know, a million of these accounts by now, it was a pretty gripping one.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I do have a good woke one. Remembrance. This was from my old stomping grounds of Portland. There was a restaurant that opened up, and it was called Colonial Saffron. And this attracted the endless protests and some really awful coverage in the local alt weekly, Lammet Week, about how this was a white supremacist restaurant because they called it Colonial Saffron. It's, of course, colonialism, you know.
That's a good one.
And so then it became this disaster for the restaurant owner, and they got eventually closed, I believe, and, you know, there was no appeasing these people, but, yeah, that was a good one. Portland was actually a good, was a good feeding ground for some of these controversies. There was another one where, there was a, rock band, that was, gonna play a show in Portland, and their name is, Black Pussy, and, which is, the original name for the Rolling Stones song Brown Sugar, but, you know, to call it Black Pussy is, inherent violence against, women of color, so... or people of color presenting as female.
Tell that and, to that one battle after another movie. Jesus. Obsessed with the concept.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Yikes. But now we're
moving on.
We're moving on.
Woke One is in the rearview mirror.
Well, speaking of, we talked about her last week, so we should talk about her this week, I guess. Frances Hong.
Francesca.
Francesca, sorry. Lost her primary.
Fran to her friends.
Yeah, FH.
Yeah.
Lost her primary in Wisconsin by a whisker, it should be said. But the more establishment Democratic candidates.
The establishment strikes back.
Got him. Yeah, this is, so she lost her primary and she became a bit of an internet celebrity for her many kind of ridiculous woke postings, you know, wanting to cancel Thanksgiving because it celebrates genocide or whatever. Even though the holiday itself celebrates cooperation between natives and settlers.
Yeah.
But that's all beside the point now. But she lost in a very close primary. I feel like commentary on who actually wins the election, maybe this is a dumb point, but I think that's actually kind of stupid, right? Because it was like by a fraction of a percent that she lost, right? And so if she won, It would be, oh, you know, woke is on the march, the left wing is on the march. If 3,000 people voted a different way, we'd be drawing a completely opposite conclusion from this election. But instead, she lost by 3,000 votes, and so it's the complete opposite. The establishment strikes back, moderates are back in control, whatever
Patriots
else.
Patriots in charge.
Patriots in control, yeah. But the difference between one result and another is 3,000 people who got up and went to the polls because it wasn't raining that day.
Right.
Right?
Right. Or just they liked his personality more.
Yeah, sure, right, yeah.
Seems kind of
right.
Weird and off-putting.
Right. In competitive elections, like,
yeah,
it's just like there's really not much you can say,
yeah,
right, from the actual result of it. But, yeah, it's the point
there's
is...
There's so little you can say, I wasn't even going to say anything. And you brought it up.
Yeah, sorry.
Here
well,
we go again.
You know, I'm doing this for the readers, or the listeners, watchers. Mm. However you consume this.
Catherine doesn't have power right now. She's like lost her electricity or something.
Oh, right. She literally doesn't have power right,
right
now.
Right. So she has no idea what's going on here.
Is there anything
today's
you
want to
the
day.
Oh. No, of course not.
No, we would never. We could never, in our hearts would not let us.
Mm-mm.
My own vocal cords would seize up
if
I was ever induced to betray our fearless leaders.
As a good Grand Vizier would.
Yes. And the same would be true of you, my liege. You have only to take what is yours. Yes. Yes. I was thinking about... What was I going to say?
Oh, actually, can I bring something
up? Oh, just jump right in.
Yeah, okay.
Come right on in. The water's fine.
There's a poll going around. One of my mutuals on Twitter asked his followers, would you be a good dictator? And
was this one of the Nazi accounts you follow or one of the ones I follow? Or
I think we both follow them.
Probably.
But do you think you'd be a good dictator?
Well, I would be a vengeful dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's bad because you can't just reach a settlement, right? You know?
No, I wouldn't even be that vengeful. I gotta let things go all the time in media.
But then you're letting.
But then I had the power not to.
But also then maybe you're letting. You know, this is a classic way in which dictators fail, is that they have enemies that they don't. It's not a good thing, but if you want to stay in power, you gotta be ruthless and kill your enemies, right?
Yeah.
So I was coming up with a list of like character features that you would need to be a good dictator.
Mm, you're right. I am so beautiful. I am so smart. I should rule. Yeah.
But ruthlessness is, you know, pretty high up on the list. Ruthlessness and judgment. So you need to be willing to do anything terrible mm-hmm. in order to stay in power, but also you need to know when to do those things and when to be conciliatory.
I see.
And I don't think I'd be good at either of those things.
Yeah.
You're not a
particularly ruthless person.
I don't think so.
No.
Look at how I let you boss
me
around.
Yeah.
Which would be bad for being a dictator.
Yeah.
The one thing I think both of us would have going for us is that we don't have ridiculous views on economics.
Mm.
And so like
we would not wreck our economies.
We would not bankrupt the kingdom.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that way we could be some Lee Kuan Yew types. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would the temptation to just like utter extravagance I'm not sure that's really appealing. I'm a simple guy.
But sometimes you
can with relatively simple things.
But sometimes maybe the cult of personality is necessary for you to you know who Frank de Cotter is? Mm-hmm. Dutch political scientist, mm-hmm. historian. He writes a lot about dictators, but he talks about the cult of personality, and there's a couple of views on the cult of personality. One is that like you're actively trying to make yourself popular, right? In order to you know, prevent your overthrow. The other is that you just have to be such a presence in everyone's mind that no one can feel comfortable articulating any criticism of you. So it's not really popularity. It's about using the culture
fear.
As a way of, fear.
Yeah. I don't know how to do mass appeal, but a lot of successful dictator type, or just, you know, leaders who are pre-democracy anyway, so do we call them dictators or not, you have to reward your main supporters, like your top guys, your top generals, your top advisors. You share the spoils with them.
Right.
That's such an important thing to do. That I think I could do well. You keep those people happy. Like Cao Cao, who's a character I really like from Romance of the Three Kingdoms of Chinese history, he actually didn't like... He dressed pretty plainly. You know, when they conquered a new area, he shared the spoils with his people loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And he treated them like equals. You don't lord it over your people unless you're gonna do a Stalin-type rule via fear that everyone thinks. But that's chaotic and unsafe.
See, but that's...
So instead, you reward the people around you. You listen to them. You make them feel like they're part of your family, your friends. You got a charm offensive in your supporters. Not even so much if you're doing a dictatorship. The masses don't really matter as much, I think.
But your inner circle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those people got to feel real good about you.
See, this is where judgment comes in, because that can also be very dangerous. Because if you have a, you know, inner circle of favorites or whatever else, some of them might decide, hey, why are we even supporting this guy? We have a go-to successor right here, right?
Mm.
So you got to kind of mow the lawn a little bit. This is what Stalin would do all the time, right? He would elevate someone and then denounce them and then slightly rehabilitate them, and then boom, they were gone.
Yeah, that's the cult of fear way. You know, a lot of in the barbarian hordes in the like fall of Rome type period, the ones who were really successful shared their wives with all their top general people.
Mm.
That's one way to keep them happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they're just getting rid of their wives, though. You know,
the old
give themselves a break. Yeah. It's my night off. Oh God.
My wife, take her.
Taking wife to House of Dragon. Push into to salamander den. Oh no! Wife disappears in salamander cage.
Oh no! Not that.
Salamanders are not dangerous.
I think some of them
animals?
Are poisonous.
Are they poisonous?
I think some of them are.
It's a iconic fire element thing.
Salamander?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Actually, that was something I was going to bring up.
Hmm. Fire.
Magical element. I saw this tweet just now that was profound and that stayed with me.
Huh.
Would you like to know what this tweet was?
Mm-hmm.
The tweet was, responding to someone who said, why are there no, why is it all ancient runes? Why aren't there any runes now? Someone said,
I don't even say that.
Microchips are our runes. Computer processing equipment. You use it's our kind of magic, and it was making me think about like magical system. You know, you have like in fiction. Mm. You know, you have a Harry Potter style magical system that's a little underrealized and mm-hmm. is based on words, mm-hmm. right? And is not based on like elemental forces yeah. versus Avatar: The Last Airbender, where mm-hmm. it's like elemental magic. Mm-hmm. What kind of systems of magic kind of type things do you like?
Oh, that is a really interesting question, and
you know
that's tough.
Like in a lot of like Marvel Universe things, it's specific to what the character can do,
right?
Right, like Doctor Strange can manipulate reality in a way that's actually not very well
thought out. Yeah, superheroes, you could describe them as kind of magical figures, right? For the most part, a superhero, it's some inherent power and ability of theirs, right? So Doctor Strange would actually be an exception to this. Yeah. They can manipulate forces of time, right? But like,
well, Tony Stark's just a guy in a suit.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. A Spider-Man or
it's a genetic
flash or whatever
genetic
else, right?
Alteration that gives you a specific thing you can do.
Right. Yeah. I actually, I think the most interesting type of magic in fiction is actually kind of like Lord of the Rings type magic, mm-hmm. where the magic is kind of subtle and kind of tapping into forces that are beyond your comprehension or...
Right, Gandalf can manipulate the environment around them to some degree.
Right, but it's often not exactly clear what forces he's drawing on or even what effect
it has,
it's
kind of based on his own confidence in the moment mm-hmm. to some degree.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that feels a little more ancient and spiritual, mm-hmm. right?
You like that, like calling on the deep magic, or
more,
it could be hearkening to some the gods or the that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a little more mysterious, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like something like that. Yeah,
the there's a book series I really like, The Magicians. It was also a television series on the Sci-Fi Channel that's really good. My brother really likes it. He was visiting. We were talking about it the other day. It's kind of like an adult Harry Potter mm-hmm. type book series. That's being derivative, it's really good, mm-hmm. and their magic is like it's almost like it's like gravity or Newtonian physics. Like there are clearly properties to it, but they're just not very well understood, and you're kind of like you're like getting at it, but you don't really understand it, like. Their magical books say, okay, when the moon is in its third quarter, and that, like there's all these conditions that impact the magic you can do, and then it's based on hand movements, and it's like you're it's almost like there's probably an equation for exactly how it works, but you don't really know what it is. So, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like grounded in scientific concepts.
Yeah,
I thought that was really interesting.
You know what's a really good one? I don't watch a lot of anime, but one that I did watch when I was a kid was Full Metal Alchemist. Did you ever watch that?
No.
So it's like the magic
Are there a lot of girls in sailor costumes in that one?
There's some.
Good.
It's not zero.
Okay.
The magic is literally alchemy, but it's presented, it's kind of like a steampunk type universe, so it's mm-hmm. presented as science, right? Mm-hmm. You have to draw the particular pentagrams and then combine the right chemicals in order to transform them into whatever you're trying to make or produce. But then the big spoilers, if you haven't watched this, because actually it's really good. But the big reveal is all that makes sense, except for where's the energy come for all these alchemic equations, whatever, and it's deaths from our world because it's actually a parallel universe. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
I like that stuff.
Very good.
Full Metal Alchemist. I've never checked it out. I'll check it out. Sometime.
I would recommend it. Yeah, I would recommend it. It's really strange. It's one of those. This is why I never can get super into anime because there's like, it'll often deal with sci-fi concepts. Not that.
I say this with love.
Yeah. You're allowed to.
Yeah.
But just like the many of the tropes and just kind of mannerisms of mm-hmm. characters and even just the animations are just a little too strange for me, mm-hmm. right? So I can never really get too into anime, even if I like the concept. But
yeah. I kind of stick with anime intended for Western audiences, Avatar, the original Pokemon series, which I rewatch periodically. That's, I think, is just so good.
I rewatched Detective Pikachu.
That's a great movie.
It's a very good movie.
It's a pretty good movie. I was bummed that didn't launch its own cinematic universe, because that was great. It was very good. Even it paid off a little bit of the show because it's the same Mewtwo character, and it was but it was a little self-contained story. It was very good, and the Pokemon looked good with the CGI. I thought it was
very well done.
Well incorporated into our world.
Yeah, you know what I would love to see them do is take that universe and then make like kind of like a mystery series from it, right?
Yeah.
Where it's about him being a detective in the city, whatever it's called.
You think this would be the easiest concept to greenlight in the world? Put me in, coach. I got ideas. I can write you a little Pokemon mystery story. It'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Did you see that National Review essay about Agatha Christie?
No. What did it say?
It's talking about, she gets dismissed as, just writing fun little mysteries. There's not much going on there. But really, her villain is social planners. So,
ooh, I will check that out.
Okay, I'll send
it to
you.
I don't know if I agree with that. I'm going through a Miss Marple story right now.
Where, if I wanted to start reading some Agatha Christie, where should I start?
I would read first... Death on the Nile.
Okay.
If you have no familiar with Death of the Nile, that would be the one to start with,
okay.
I think. Death on the Nile. Mm-hmm. It is very good. It's famous, but deserves its reputation. It's very good. I would read Death on the Nile.
Okay.
That's Poirot. It's a perfect representation of what Agatha Christie is like, and it's a pretty good one.
Okay. You got it.
That would be my recommendation.
Sweet.
All right. Should we leave it there?
We'll leave it there.
Tell us in the comments what kind of spells you endeavor to cast in your magical universe.
Please don't cast hexes on us.
Just on Christian.
No, I
no, never, my liege. Never, all right, never.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Adios.